Last night, President Ramaphosa convened a meeting with the nation to address the issue of how the country deals with the growing number of cases of coronavirus. The country remains on alert level 3 of the lockdown, which includes alcohol sales remaining banned and no social gatherings allowed, with the exception of funerals, of course, which must have a maximum of 50 attendees with social distancing. On top of the existing regulations, the government has moved to close some 20 land borders with South Africa, many of which are key to intra-Africa commerce until the middle of February. The president also detailed plans around vaccinating some 67% of the population over the year. Well, to get some perspective on the speech, I'm joined on the line by Mike Schussler. He's chief economist at economist.co.za. Thanks very much for joining us, Mike. So there's quite a bit to unpack, but I think one of the key changes announced last night was the issue of the closing of the 20 land borders, some of which are quite key from a commerce perspective. What were your thoughts in this regard? And does it get the balance right between saving lives and livelihoods? And is that even still a debate anyway?
Yeah, it's very difficult, you know, to always just criticize. But the point is, perhaps with us closing our borders, we must remember that some of our industries are going through tough times for a long period of time. For example, I know of people who have hotels who haven't had many guests for 10 months, who are really struggling. And I think my feeling is if you do things like close borders, close beaches, or keep them closed, then you have to help those industries that will be impacted by it.
Yes.
For example, the restaurant industry, the gym industry, the hotel industry, catering and the likes. But coming back to the borders, I think as long as we keep the freight open for now, and it's a short-term thing, then I don't think it's going to have that much of a bigger impact.
Yeah.
The main thing I think for me is that the level 3 restrictions are on the curfew side, which is limiting business. It's limiting, for example, airline flights. It's limiting trains and buses. And it's also obviously on the restaurants and those sort of industries that still work at night. And that's a bigger issue, I think, overall. And same with the closures of places. I think they've got to have a way that they can take hotspots off the lists again. So if, for example, the Eastern Cape has come through the worst and, you know, you've seen the drop, then maybe you can take off the hotspots again and allow people back onto the beach. Because I think it's very important that people, first of all, get outside. And second of all, I think that economic activity can at least start getting some traction from the locals. You know, in the next, as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Look, if I can say one other thing, the one thing I've worked out now, there's still, you know, these restrictions that we have at level 3, and I've gone through them, they impact about close to 1.4 million people still, if I use 2019 data, because our 2020 data isn't, you know, that robust.
Yes.
But that gives us an idea that there's still a lot of people outside. If you take just the private sector, you know, outside of government and outside of domestic workers, that's more than 10% of our population or our working population that is in a very, very deep, dire straits sort of situation, because now there is no more temporary employment relief scheme. There's no other scheme that's helping. And also those businesses have fixed costs like rents and so on to pay.
Yes.
And it makes it very difficult. So one can say, yes, but the restaurants are open. I say, yes, but 40% of their income or profit comes from selling liquor.
That's right.
And many restaurants actually, you know, do better late at night than early in the evening. So, you know, when they have to close at 8 o'clock, it sort of depresses the whole industry.
Yes.
And it's not just about restaurants, it's just what things are right now. And I think we've got to find a way to, once a hotspot is over, to clear it out and maybe to find other ways to implement the curfew for less hours, because right now it's 8 hours of curfew. If we make it 6 hours of curfew, will it still have the same impact? I think so.
Mm-hmm.
It will allow certain industries to operate at a better level.
Yeah, it's a very tricky situation, of course, because we do see that the infections are rising terribly, as well as the deaths as well. But there's always this balancing act that needs to be reached. But I think one of the key things that you really touched on is government support. In all the other jurisdictions where we see that there's been, you know, strict lockdowns and so on, government and, you know, the monetary side of things kicks in to try and help those people who've been directly affected. But then the problem for South Africa, of course, is that we're broke.
Yes, we are broke. But there's another thing. When you're broke, you have to be very clever with your finances.
Hmm.
And if you want businesses to survive, particularly businesses that have now been in a form of restricted trading for 10 months now, then you have to really start thinking, you know, these guys are about to fall over. You're not giving anything more to them. And if they do fall over, we know, for example, the industries that are impacted at the moment pay on average 7 billion rand a month in taxes. You know, if they are going to fall over, you're going to lose that 7 billion anyway. If you then give them the 7 billion to help pay with their fixed costs, or at least part monthly, to help pay with the rent, help pay the insurance, help pay the utility bills, the interest on their building, that's important. And I think if you then work that out, you know, once the excise duties that you collect from them, the company taxes and the VAT, you know, you may pay out for 3 or 4 months, but then you are more likely to get that money back in the next year, and it will help cover. But if the industry drops, then you've got that whole
when they come back.
Well.
Yeah.
And the same with the workers. We have to find a way, because that's 9.6 billion in the formal sector, that's excluding the informal sector, that the workers that are impacted are potentially losing. But if you could get the TERS to pay them, say, at least 1.5 billion a month, it will make a big difference to people who have no income. Right now, for example, you can't operate a nightclub because of the curfew.
Yeah.
You know, and many of the people in an airline are doing less hours because flights can only operate at 60 or 70%, and then they're still not quite full. So, you know, we have to find ways to do this, and every country, major country in the world, has helped. Yes, Zimbabwe hasn't helped, but Zimbabwe has really much less than we do. But, you know, countries like Mexico, countries like Germany paid the fixed rent, the fixed costs of businesses. And I think that's very important, at least to tie them over, especially when you've done it this long.
Yeah, you've got to look at the long-term picture. Now, we heard today that the chairman of the Ministerial Advisory Committee on COVID-19, that is Professor Salim Abdul Karim, he took responsibility and has lamented that South Africa didn't move quickly in investigating vaccine manufacturing capacity here in South Africa. And he said we should have been doing that as far back as July. And then, of course, now we're furiously trying to secure what we can, which is going to mean mass importation. And of course, this is going to cost money because we're going to have to pay foreign currency for these drugs. Are there any concerns on your side that the government, given that it is broke, is going to have quite a hard time to fund these vaccines? We see that it's trying to partner with the private sector in the form of medical aids to help as well.
Well, look, we've got to get those vaccines rolling out as quickly as possible. Once you've got the vaccine, your economy can open up fully, and it'll take the fear factor away from people, and you'll start collecting money. If you don't roll out the vaccines, then the economy doesn't get going, and you lose more than the money that you're going to spend on the vaccine.
Yes.
So it's very much a tricky situation, and it's the same with trying to save some of the businesses. Right now, I think the first thing that we should be doing is looking at getting the vaccine as quickly as possible, as much as possible rolled out. You know, if you can give it to the healthcare workers, for example, and the older, fragile people, you can bring down the death rate quite substantially. And that would clear your hospitals, where you'd be saving money from the hospital spend. to a large extent, not maybe 100%.
Mm.
It would also help you get your economy going. At the other end, if you start helping some businesses out and some labor part, they would also spend, you get some of that money back right away in the form of VAT and the alike. But you would also have businesses that can quite easily survive without, you know, becoming in trouble. And
yes.
If we don't do that, especially the longer term closures or restrictive businesses, you run the risk of, you know, bank defaults because the loans start coming down as well. And that has another impact in the sense that the rating agencies would look at that. Your growth declines, your banks look a bit more risky, and your cost of capital goes up again. So all those things are against you. So it makes sense for government to start spending again, especially when there's a lockdown. I don't like high deficit, but we have no choice. The cost of not doing it is at least equal, if not more, than doing it. But the suffering will be far, far, far less.
Yeah.
And the survival rate will be better. So I think that's the way I'm thinking. I don't think, you know, it's a magic cure-all. I don't really think so. I think we will be in trouble for years to come. But we will be in trouble for years to come anyway.
Yeah. Mike, we thought last year was a real miserable year, but given what, you know, we see before us in terms of the health and the economic crisis that we're faced with now, and the fact that rolling out vaccines is going to take quite some time, what is your prognosis now about South Africa's key metrics, especially GDP and, of course, the job situation?
Well, it's very difficult. The first thing is I've looked at this and I don't know. I'm not a medical forecaster, but let's assume, if I may, that we're going to be in a form of restrictions until at least the 15th of February. That tells me that the first quarter GDP is going to be negative.
Yes.
We should have a pretty good bounce back, but it will be in the second quarter, if that is the case. But it will mean that this year's growth is not going to be between 3.5% and 4.5%, which most economists and government were hoping for. We're then looking at probably around half that, where we're going to be at 1.8, say, to 2.5% percent growth. And that worries me, because if I then look at the population growth, we run the risk of again staying a lot poorer.
Yes.
And it makes for further downgrades, maybe not right away. We do have a little bit of leeway, but I think by you know, just off the budget of next year, that is 2022, we could have another round of downgrades, and that will make it very, very difficult for us to get out of the negative or junk status. It will take us at least a decade then. And under those circumstances, the cost of capital for a savings-poor country like South Africa will remain very, very high. So my forecast at the moment is that we're looking at a higher inflation rate due to commodity prices, partly, but not that much out of sync because, you know, medical aids are not increasing and so on. That's also positive.
Yes.
But I think overall, a reasonably higher inflation rate, I'd say 4-4.5%. We're looking at a GDP growth of say 2.5%. I think we do better this year than last year.
Yes.
Obviously, if we don't get the vaccine rollout and we go for a third wave and we have to close down parts of the economy again and we have to go into a tighter restriction, then all bets are off. And you know, we again could run the risks of going negative. However, if we do get everything sorted by the 15th of February, we roll out the vaccine quicker than expected. Say we have 10% of the population covered by the middle of the second quarter or something like that, and we get some miracle do that, then, you know, the sort of 3.5%, maybe not quite 4.5%, but the 3.5% GDP growth comes back into the equation for me. And I think the one thing is, once you get the vaccine, I'm sure consumer confidence goes up. I don't know how we're going to, you know, measure the changes, because we're so low.
Yeah.
But you know, I think that helps, and it helps business confidence, and it will improve the relationship that government has with business and its population if we can do the more positive thing. Mm-hmm. If we, you know, don't get it going, then I think really it starts impacting on next year's growth even as people lose confidence.
That was Mike Schüssler. He's chief economist at economist.co.za.